Art RC and special guest interviewer
Sandra Wang.
And we're here at the House of Blues with Rachel Yamagata. How you doing, Rachel?
Can I be a pirate too?
Yeah.
Pirate Rachel.
Pirate Rachel.
Pirate Yamagata.
Perfect. If it's understood that I don't want you hanging out with me, but I want you when I call. And we can stay together separately, and we won't be lonely at all. Oh boy, oh boy, I got to think about that. Let's go with Pirate Yamagata.
Pirate.
And she's here actually on tour supporting her double disc.
Yes.
Album. It's Elephants and
Teeth Sinking into Heart.
So it's pretty cool, actually. A lot of people are just going with almost strictly online formatting, not really worrying about what kind of package they give their fans anymore offline. So did you come up with the design for your album?
Well, we definitely wanted to highlight the fact that the two discs are different vibes, and we wanted to play into that a little bit. And so essentially we made two covers. Did kind of go in thinking that how are we going to represent this so that when you look at it, you're not sure what it is. We want to kind of confuse people from the outset. And so when in the photo shoot, actually, we just did this one cover that's very kind of nature-oriented and beautiful in the woods and a lot of lush greens and reds. And I've got my face hidden, I've got my bangs going, the whole deal. And that's really kind of for the intimate Elephants disc, which is very influenced by, you know, nature and these heart-wrenching ballads and things that are very lush, orchestrated, all of that. And then the second cover looks a little more dangerous. I didn't have bangs in that. Like, halfway through the photo shoot, we just cut them. And it's a little more, like, sassy. I don't know, there's something about it that's a little more come hither. You can see like one eye. Next album I have both eyes fully visible, but like, you know, it had like this other take to it. And the music for that side, the Teeth Singing in the Heart side, has a different kind of edge to it. A lot of like electric guitars and sassy lyrics, and it's very gutsy. So we did spend some time checking out the artwork, and I love it. I think it's the same. Yeah. It's a completion to your statement, and I think it really helps to make something feel like a piece of work, a piece of art. And to not have that, to me, it's like taking the paper away from a book. You lose some of the ritual and whatnot. So I enjoy that kind of thing.
One thing that I think is interesting, and just in talking to different artists, I mean, what you've done is you've created this album that basically doesn't have any of like the two and a half to three and a half minute singles. Like 100% for sure, this is what's on the radio. You actually have like a 9 minute song, which is totally unusual, and then you're actually on a major label too that's allowing you to do this. So how did you assign basically with Warner Brothers again, or like in the last year?
Mm-hmm.
So how did you kind of pull that off, like decide to go ahead and sign with a major label? And then how did you kind of get them to let you do what you did?
Well, I had made this record with RCA, which was my previous label. And, you know, there were a lot of artistic problems with, I think, because of the nature of this record. It's not a traditional pop commercial statement by any means. You know, song three is not radio single whatsoever. And Sunday Afternoon, that 9 minute song, is in the middle of the record, so that even the sequencing goes against all of the typical tricks of like presenting a record. So I think it came about because I had this side A, side B treatment for this album already in mind, and I literally made little art project books to present it to labels when I was meeting with them, saying, this is my vision, this is how I see this disc evolving into this one, and I want to do double discs, and I want this, you know, presentation of it. And I had enough options where I could kind of play it as a negotiating factor and say, and see how people would respond to that. And I knew that Warner's got it artistically when they really listened to the argument for it, and they really entertained it and got it and listened to it both ways and still had very constructive thoughts as well, and yet ultimately were confident enough to let me kind of take the reins with some of this, and so that made it easier to you know, go into the major label system again, because here's a major label that happens to get what I'm going for. And I just love their roster, and everybody in each department was very cool. So, you know, it was a nice combination.
That's cool. Yeah. How did the production of this album change, I guess? Because if you look at your instrumentation, it's pretty different from the first mm-hmm. album, really. So did you kind of learn a lot from making the first album as far as studio goes and working with a different kind of band?
Yeah, I think a lot of it came with just learning more myself on the road and in the studio, and being fascinated by the production side of things, whether it's, you know, different compressors or microphones or textures, like effects that can, you know, make a guitar sound like a totally different instrument. And you know, when I was demoing these songs for this record, I pretty much had the same process as last time, where I was, you know, I'll add little melodies of things. I hear melodies for different instruments all the time, and, you know, oftentimes one instrument can't even reach those notes, so we have to revise. But I did the same kind of thing where I just have these, you know, keyboards with every kind of instrument on it, and I build up these tracks in demo form of ways that I think they might go. And then when you start collaborating with producers and musicians, they are, you know, they have other great ideas, and you merge them, and it becomes what it is. But I think that we went further in terms of making this record more lush. We even the orchestrations were richer. We had a great arranger, Nate Walcott, who was in the Mike Mogus land of people, the Saddle Creek people, and Mike Mogus was the producer, and as well as some string players, Becky Doe and Ollie Krauss, that I had played with for years, and they're fabulous with going off and almost creating and recording their own parts, and just, you know, you fall in love with them. So a combination of all of that, I think, made it possible to go even more lush. The guitar stuff that happens, which is a big step for me, because I haven't done, you know, gritty guitar rock on any of these records. We touched on it for the first record, but in a more pop-oriented way, not so much rock. I think that happened because I got more comfortable on stage playing guitar. I was writing songs that had these sassy lyrics, and I really wanted to match the music with it. And to do that, I didn't want to quite go the safe route in a perhaps pop way, but really kind of gruff up the textures just as sassy as the lyrics were. So I was, you know, I love a lot of Tom Waits and PJ Harvey and, you know, Chris Robbins in the way he sings, and like anything that like really gets you on a guttural level. And so we just did that, you know, twisted instruments around until it sounded like, you know, like it would hit you in your gut. And like there's songs like Faster that have very like physical sounds to it. I mean, we were literally stomping 10 people around a microphone and clapping and snapping and doing all this stuff just to get this weight through on the sound on the recording side. So yeah, a lot of experimentation.
I can't talk to you. You think I'm lost inside my mind. You're like an old tattoo, and I know you'll fade in time. I'm not the girl you think you know. I'm not the girl. Don't you let me be, 'cause I'm a million miles away, but don't you set me free.
That's, I think, my favorite song on the album.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. That one and the one before it, which I can't remember the name.
So Accident, maybe?
Yeah.
Cool.
But I know what you mean. Like, the way you're describing it, that's exactly how I feel like when I listen to it.
Excellent.
Like, you definitely got that message through.
Thank you.
So.
Thank you.
But yeah, I was telling her on the way over here, like, just the difference in your live show. Because I think I saw you, I don't know, the first time, but you were solo back then, just you and the piano. I think it was here, actually.
Yeah.
Just you and the piano. And then maybe last year you came back with
Citizen Cope, that one?
Citizen Cope down at the 4th and B. Uh-huh. And you had, like, a full band, and you were, like, rocking out. Yeah. And, like, it was just so great, because you didn't have a new album out yet, but you changed all your old stuff mm-hmm. and made it so much, like, you just added more life to it. And mm-hmm. I thought it was cool, the direction that you're going into.
Excellent.
With the rock and the guitar.
Yeah.
It worked.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always, there's so many different ways to play live shows. I've done some where it's, a string quartet and the piano, and which is a beautiful thing in of itself. And then, there's nothing like, there's a certain like energy that you get when you can have these epic guitar solos and the full band. And it's like, I do have a fondness for a great like rock journey on stage. You know what I mean? Like, so I love to kind of play with both sides and see what I can get. So
cool.
Has anything on stage kind of surprised you? Like, were you playing something, say, from Elephant, which is the more, I guess, calm side of the record, mm-hmm. if, for lack of a better word right now? Have you tried to change anything up from that and make it more...
I haven't tried Elephants as a rock song yet. That's what you mean.
If the elephants have past lives, yet are destined to always remember, it's no wonder how they scream. Like you and I, they must have some temper. And I am dreaming of them on the plains, dirtying up their bed, watching for some sign of rain to cool their. How dare that you send me that card when I'm doing all that I can do? You are forcing me to remember when all I want is to just forget you.
For this record, you know, we're traveling right now with a four-piece, so there are certain arrangement things that you change just because you don't have the string section. You know, every now and then we do have our cello player, but so people take a little line, you know, a line here, a line there, and it's almost like a puzzle to find the right combination of who takes over what part and how do you fill it out. And sometimes it changes dramatically, but I can't think of anything too different that we're doing. We're the ones that sometimes we'll play with, or that I have played with in the past, are older songs like mm-hmm. "Worn Me Down." I've done a piano version of that. It's that totally not like straight ahead rock. It's more of a ballad. The essence of the recording is just because it's a newer record, so to kind of get it out there and they're closer to the recording, but who knows? Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I've written a couple arrangements for you.
Have you?
No.
Oh, you know,
would that be lunatic?
Actually, you know what? Now that I say that, I'm totally remembering. We actually did do a rock version of Elephants in the studio.
Oh.
We played around with the music of it. We weren't going to keep it as Elephants, but we played the music in this rock way, and it's really, really cool, but that just reminded me. It's a track that was unused that I would have to kind of dig up and find and see how could we make it work. I was just watching an orangutan special. We could do, like, orangutan. That'll be the next record. Series of Animals. How they're feeling.
The Zoo series.
Yeah, right? Zoo series.
It'd be like Time Life Presents Rachel Yamagata Zoo Collection. Series.
Totally.
Get elephants, and in 2 weeks, if you like that.
Right.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I could do that.
So how many songs did you end up kind of just ended up on the floor, basically? I mean...
I think we did about 25 total for the in the record. And I did some with my first producer, John Alasia, as well. And also a friend of mine, Kevin Salem, who's done production and just guitar greatness on all the records I've ever done. So out of all of those, I think we had about 25. So there were probably five or six that didn't quite make the cut. And there's, you know, some are B-sides, some are... you'll probably pick that up. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that's okay.
Some are we released on a self-released EP in between labels, and then others are just kind of, you know, they're still there. I'm not quite sure what to do with them, but they just weren't, you know, good songs, but didn't quite fit into the sequencing plan of this record. It would have disrupted it in a strange way. So,
So when you ended up a theater major, graduating as a theater major, and your songs have been used in TV shows, especially from the first album.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're definitely telling stories, whether they're mostly your own stories, first of all. Is that accurate?
Yeah, definitely.
So have you thought about going the direction of writing for theater or something like that?
You know,
or is that...
it's funny. I would love to write a musical. Like, I that's a world that I just always loved. I love the romantic acting out quality of being on stage and singing in the middle of a dialogue, and you know, like that kind of hamming it up, I think I could really fall in love with and just really go the distance, and I think that might be really fun. I'd also love to do some sort of like soundtrack stuff, instrumental things, because I really love that side of it as well. Or maybe something for a film where, you know, it's not all just particular songs, but it you know, goes with the storyline. And even when I was sequencing Elephants, for me it always felt like a film score, like something that you would, one blends into the next in this certain way that I really like. And so I think there is something in there that I'd like to explore.
And it seems like every once in a while it's getting a little popular. I mean, the Killers do a lot of like kind of long versions of kind of narratives, and then the Decemberists just put out essentially a rock opera album. So
really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They're new ones. So it just seems that...
That's cool.
That's not...
It's not such an unusual idea.
No, but it's cool, and it's good that, as an artist, I think you're looking to, like, blend things together and make a cohesive work and not just, oh, yeah, this song's cool, I'll throw it in there. And then,
Definitely.
We're listening going, oh, what?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Or you turn it up a little bit, and then the next song, like, blasts.
Right? I know. Those are tricks people use, you know. Turn it off quiet so they have to yank it up, and then like, what? Oh my god! Yeah.
As far as your writing, I mean, lyrically, I think you do though, and I think one reason that you are used in soundtracks is that you do really hit people lyrically. And I mean, do you ever have you ever been afraid of exposing some part of yourself, or you're just like, this is what it is? And
No, I think that, you know, I never think of it when I'm writing it. You know, fortunately, that doesn't occur to me. It occurs to me after I've already done it, and then I've fallen in love with the song. And, like, you know, if it feels really true, if I'm really saying something intimate and I hit it for myself, then I won't want to nix a song because I feel like it's gotten too personal. I think that my experience isn't that different from anybody else's. Mm-hmm. And I find that fans really gravitate towards the honesty in things, and want somebody who's going to say what isn't said, or even portray oneself in a negative light. Mm-hmm. But it's real, you know. It's always, it's never black and white with relationships and human nature. So I don't worry so much about that. It surprises me sometimes when people seem to know a lot about me. And I'm like, how'd you find that out? And then I remember I blogged about it like 6 weeks ago or something like that. So that's where I have to be careful. I'll check myself on my blogs, and now I'm Twittering, so I'm like, God, I probably shouldn't be I have to give myself 5 minutes before I really want to Twitter.
And yeah,
then, otherwise I'm going to put something up that I will regret later. So,
just really quick about like the first your first influences, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the first album was that you actually like bought or had a say in buying? Because a lot of times our parents give us stuff.
Yeah. You know, I can't remember what I first bought. I remember the first concert ticket I ever bought. Okay. It was Huey Lewis and the News. I think the second was Neil Diamond. I went with my mom.
I did that last year. So.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah.
How was it?
Awesome,
was
actually.
It good?
It's so funny. Yeah, he stands there and just makes you keep applauding for him.
Really?
Yeah, and he doesn't move. And like you're like, okay. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, you should do that tonight. Just stand there and...
just say, Nina Simone used to say, she had this boa that she'd have, and she'd just say, I'll take some of that. I'll take that applause. People would applaud. I'll take that applause. And I, you know, another round of it. Yeah, maybe I'll try that tonight, see what happens. I don't know. For me, it might go awry very quickly. Just throw things. They just stare in silence, like, what's she doing? I think, yeah, I can't remember the first... It may have been something like Barbara Streisand. Like, my mom was really, really into Barbara Streisand.
Yeah.
I love her. So I probably bought... If I had to choose one of hers that I probably bought, it was probably the Wet album, which I loved because it was all about rain. It was all different songs involving water. So it was, like, rain, and there was Jump in the Bath or whatever that was. Or, like, wet, like all this stuff. And I was like, what a great theme. And I can never find it anymore. I had a copy, and now I lost it or something. I don't know. I moved. And I'm always on the lookout for the... album Wet by Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, so if anyone's
come to the concert, want to give me
maybe
in a brown paper bag, special delivery.
What's the first song you remember learning to play because you really wanted to, like, when you were playing the piano? And
I think Send in the Clowns, which is probably pretty telling. Nice, dark, heartbroken song. Yeah, I think I learned that on piano, and I'd start playing that. And then what was the other? Like Evergreen, something like that,
so
you know?
Very Barbara Streisand.
Yeah,
that's
or
good.
Some Billy Joel stuff, maybe. He's got great tunes.
Did you discover right away that you had a voice, or how did that, I mean, I don't know, because a lot of people, I mean, I sang along when I played the piano when I was a kid, and it wasn't, my mom didn't have the heart to tell me.
But, you know, like, have a great voice.
When did you realize that you were going to sing? And you exposed yourself quite a bit, too, doing stuff a cappella and things like that. I mean...
Yeah. Well, I think I'm probably, you know, I'm have that same insecurity that most singers probably have. Like, I have better days than, you know, some days are good, some days are bad. And when I hear myself, especially in live performances, I always think it's that answering machine effect where you're like, oh, my God, do I really sound like that? But you just kind of do it. And I think I did all these kind of music theater things in high school, and I was always the, soprano, ingenue. Like, those were the parts I would play. So I would do real high register, pretty light stuff. And then I joined this band in Chicago for a number of years, and they had this amazing female front woman who could sing like Aretha Franklin. I mean, she was amazing. So I would kind of back her up, and then she left the band, and I had to take over all her parts, and it was awful. I was terrible, because here's the little, like, you know, flighty singer trying to sing like Aretha Franklin, and it was so embarrassing for me for so long that I think I immediately went into voice lessons and had this guy who, it took several months, but something changed. She, like, you know, worked on these muscles that completely reinvented things, and I found this throaty, chesty voice with all this power that I had never had before. So I think it came about because I was so embarrassed to get up on stage and be awful every night, and it grew from there. So, but yeah, I never thought I'd do music as a profession. All of that didn't occur to me. You know, I just did it because I loved it, loved this band, and it worked out. So
I just kind of went from there.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's all good.
Cool.
But now I'm gonna ride pirate ships and take over.
Exactly. Yeah.
The band's them. Buzzes. So, yeah.
So do you happen to have any like pirate jokes, or can you give us a pirate shout out? We like to.
Hey, I do have a pirate joke, awesome. But it's not appropriate for anything you're broadcasting to other people.
Oh, no.
It's the kind of thing that we discuss on the road, and I hold my head down, and all the guys are laughing for 10 minutes. So I'll tell you after we shut this up.
So but, rest assured,
there is a pirate
awesome
joke out there. Yeah.
Like, people wake up.